We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country...
Streaming has gotten way too complicated, but you can hack the system with Prime Video. It has everything in one app with one password. See Roadhouse and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on. Or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Last season, on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
That feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. I bet on FanDuel as often and as comfortably as I possibly can. It is America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. There are fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. So many bet types. Same game parlay bets, live betting, player props, futures, and so much more. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started right now. Sign up with the promo code BOXING so they know I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network, and my guest this week, one of my favorites, Dan Rayfield, longtime boxing writer. He is the writer of the great newsletter, Fight Freaks Unite. You can subscribe to that newsletter by going over to Substack. Easiest way to do it is go to Dan's Twitter account, at DanRayfield1, and sign up there. What's happening, Dan?
Hey, Chris, how are you today? Good to talk to you again.
I am doing pretty well. A lot going on in the boxing world, though, and I want to cover a lot of ground here on this podcast. And Dan, let's start with some outside the ring news, and that involves Ryan Garcia, one of the biggest young stars in boxing, undefeated, but off for a while. Had some mental health issues early in 2021. Had some physical issues later in 2021, but is scheduled to return in early April against Emmanuel Tego, and he will do it with a new trainer in his corner. Garcia announcing this past week that he has parted ways with Eddie Reynoso and will team up with Joe Goosen for his next fight and presumably the fights beyond that. Give me a reaction to, I guess, surprising news that Garcia was splitting with Reynoso.
Well, I mean, you don't hear about a lot of guys leaving Eddie number one because he is, you know, considered at least at this moment, probably the number one trainer in the sport. He's the reigning trainer of the year. He obviously has been a huge reason why Canelo Alvarez has achieved the kind of success that he has. You know, he is the man behind Canelo, both in terms of as a trainer, as well as his manager, steering him in, you know, in the business side, as far as, you know, becoming a promotional and broadcast free agent and doing these short-term deals, and Canelo being able to rake in, you know, huge amounts of money because of those short-term deals, as well as just general popularity. So you don't hear about guys, you know, packing up and leaving that camp. But if you're going to leave Eddie Reynoso, Joe Goosen, in my opinion, has been one of the most underrated trainers as long as I've covered boxing. He's, you know, I've been doing this over 20 years. Joe's been doing it a lot longer than that. He is a fantastic trainer, a great guy, you know, has the resume to back it up, has trained, you know, countless world champions and top guys over the years. You know, and he knows Ryan Garcia from the time that Ryan was a teenager when he was an amateur, and he trained in Joe's gym in the Los Angeles area. And Joe had some hands-on time with him. He got to know Ryan and his dad, you know, pretty well over the years, even though they weren't working together as professionals. They always had, you know, from what both of them say, you know, a good relationship with each other, a friendly relationship. And so, you know, when Ryan decided to make the switch, and of course, you know, geography being part of it, Southern California, you know, it made a lot of sense. I mean, there's a lot of good trainers, especially in the Southern California area. But a lot of them have busy schedules and lots of fighters to deal with. Now, Joe has always been a guy that, even though he's trained many, many top fighters, never kept a huge stable, never wanted a huge stable, never wanted to have to split his time between, you know, 6-7 top guys. He liked to have a smaller group. So I believe that pairing, and this may be one of the reasons why Ryan elected to ask Joe to be his trainer, was because he'll get that very necessary one-on-one time. You know, he'll automatically become Joe Goosen's number one guy. You know, and all due respect to Ryan's abilities and where he's going, possibly in terms of his star power and his talent, he just wasn't going to be number one in Eddie's gym. Canelo, of course, is the king dog there. And, you know, he's preparing him for a fight in May, whoever he may fight. Not to mention he's preparing Oscar Valdez for April 30th fight. And he has other fighters in his gym. So, you know, I don't feel like they broke up on bad terms necessarily. But, you know, I don't think that he could go wrong working with Joe Goosen. Joe's a great trainer. He should be in the Hall of Fame someday. And, you know, and Eddie's a great trainer also. And it's good to have the options.
Yeah, it is good to have an option like Joe Goosen, who, as you said, is excellent. And I remember talking to Joe a year and a half, 2 years ago for a story I wrote about Ryan, and he couldn't have been more complimentary of Ryan and a bigger believer in his skill set, and always lamented not being able to work with Ryan as a professional after working with him while he was coming up the amateur ranks. I guess the question I have, Dan, was like, why? Like, was it as simple that Eddie Reynoso didn't have as much time for him, in which case it's a familiar story, as you well know, in boxing. I mean, Jose Ramirez left Freddie Roach because he wanted more one-on-one time. More recently, Virgil Ortiz left Robert Garcia in part because he wanted more one-on-one time. When guys start to reach a certain level, they want the attentiveness that comes with being on that level. So that part of it I understand. What I do wonder, Dan, is how much Canelo's criticisms had to do with it. You know, last year, Canelo came out and said Ryan was not as dedicated to boxing as he should have been. And how did Garcia take that? Was that one of the reasons that pushed him out the door? Because even if he wasn't getting the kind of attention that he may have wanted, he was in a good situation. He was working out with the reigning trainer of the year who had added things to his game that had made him better. He was in the gym every single day with the pound-for-pound king who works as hard as anyone in boxing. So he had a great trainer, a great boxing role model, and he chose to walk away from those things. So I guess I'd love to hear the truth about why Ryan elected to leave. Because, you know, his father said some things about, you know, Ryan wanting to start his own gym. I don't really get that all that much. Yeah, that was a weird one.
I mean, I do think that Canelo's very pointed criticism warranted, perhaps. I mean, that's a different story. But I do think that stung Ryan in a major way. And I have no question in my mind whatsoever that was part of the decision-making process. You know, perhaps he felt that he wasn't wanted there or that he was being unfairly criticized. Now, keep in mind, it's not that Canelo Alvarez was his trainer. It was that Eddie Reynoso was his trainer. It was not Eddie Reynoso, at least not publicly, that made those comments. It was Canelo Alvarez that made those comments. So, you know, just because another guy in the gym, even if he's the king of the gym, makes the comments, he's not your trainer. So I'm not sure if that would have been enough to prompt some guys to leave. For Ryan's purposes, it was a reason to leave. You know, having your own gym, I mean, he was in San Diego. His new gym is in San Diego. So was he just taking a different left turn to get to the place where he's going to work out? I mean, I found that to be very hollow. But I do think it's a combination of the criticism that he just, you know, wanted to get away from the negativity that he felt there was, maybe partly because of his, you know, to deal with his mental health issues. And part of it may very well have been that he did want to have more one-on-one time and be the main focus of the trainer, which he was just never going to be for the time being in the Canelo gym with Eddie, period.
Yeah. And again, I understand that. It's not an unfamiliar story, but I'll say this, you know, Joe's a great guy, excellent trainer, a lot of pressure on him now. If Ryan looks like he's taking some kind of step back, Joe's going to, right or wrong, Joe's going to absorb some of the blame for that.
Well, I'll tell you how serious Joe Goosen is about this. I spoke to Joe on the night that the announcement that Ryan was switching came, and we had a conversation about the fact that they had worked together when he was an amateur and how much respect they had for each other and how much Joe thought of his abilities. You know, I believe that his comments were genuine, or I don't think he would have taken the gig. But here's what tells me, as somebody who has known Joe for so many years, what tells me that he's so serious about this. If you know Joe Goosen and all the great fighters that he has trained throughout his career, you know, I'm talking about Michael Nunn, Joel Casamayor, Diego Corrales, Gabriel and Rafael Ruelas, you know, from the time they came up, many, many champions through the years, you know, even guys that didn't necessarily become champions, but became top contenders, you know, working with guys like Chris Areola, for example, in the heavyweight division. Here's the one thing you know about Joe Goosen. If you're going to train with him, you're coming to his gym, you're going to do things his way. He's not a guy that like packs up and goes to a training camp in the mountains for 6 months or 3 months or whatever. But Joe made the commitment to Ryan Garcia to leave his home area in Los Angeles and go to San Diego, you know, 3-4 hours away, leave his family, and he's going to go live in San Diego and do his thing with Ryan Garcia. I don't remember. I mean, correct me if I am wrong, perhaps somebody out there listening, but I don't remember the last time Joe Goosen packed the bag and left and went to somebody else's training camp instead of having them come to him. Now, I don't think it's that. Look, Joe has been around a long time. It's not like he's dying for the money. Okay. I think he genuinely believes in Ryan Garcia's talent. And that was one of the stipulations. Look, I want to work with you. I hope you want to work with me, but if that's the case, we have to do it in my gym in San Diego. And Joe made the decision that it was worth the time and effort. That's how much he believes in the kid.
Yeah, he really does. And he said this subsequently, and I remember him saying it to me a couple of years ago, that, and I took it as hyperbole at the time, but he believes Ryan Garcia at his best cannot be beaten. Like he really believes that. You know, that we'll see, but
everybody can be beaten, but I hear what he's saying.
I don't think he was saying that even about like Diego Corrales or certainly not Chris Areola. Like he just seems to believe there's something in Ryan Garcia's skill set that makes him unbeatable if he's at his best. So I'm very curious to see how that dynamic works out beginning April 9th against
one thing about it, Chris. Yeah, I know this. Ryan Garcia will get the very best of what Joe's got to offer. He, you know, he's not a guy that cuts corners. His reputation has never been a guy that just rests on the laurels. He's going to get everything he's got, you know?
Yeah, including maybe a denim jacket that he can roll into the ring with as the Joe goes.
That's a whole other podcast you do on Joe's fashion choices.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about George Kambosos, the lightweight champion, who seems to be zeroing in on his next fight. As we well know, the first two options, the main options for Kambosos were a unification type fight against Devin Haney that would settle the WBC championship once and for all, and a title defense against Vasily Lomachenko. Now, in the last few weeks, Ryan Garcia, some kind of arrangement there has emerged as a possibility. I saw Oscar De La Hoya tweeting out on Wednesday night, you know, Kambosos, the most lucrative option for you is Ryan Garcia. I don't really disagree with that necessarily, but I don't think that's a front burner type of thing for Kambosos. It sure sounds like, Dan, that Kambosos is closing in on a deal with Vasily Lomachenko. Lomachenko has done everything he possibly can to make sure that he gets this fight, whereas Devin Haney, you can make the argument, has not. So what's your read on the situation about what Kambosos is going to do next?
The short answer is I believe that come early June, he's going to be defending the title against Vasily Lomachenko in Australia in a late morning, early afternoon fight, Australia time, to play to the primetime audience here on ESPN. They have the framework of a deal done. Really, the only thing that it's lacking at the moment is for George to officially sign off on it. Top Rank and Lou DiBella have made their agreements with one another. One of the big factors that was keeping it from getting to the point where it was necessary for George to give the sign-off was in Australia, similar to like in the United States, where the NFL rules down there, I guess it's Australian football rules. And think about if you were a United States promoter and you were trying to do a big fight and you went to a stadium or to a league or to a team and asked them to move a game. You know, no one's moving an NFL game. They had to get the AFL to move a game out of the stadium they want to use, I believe in Melbourne, and they were able to get that done. So before they could really take it to George for official sign-off, you know, they had to make sure that they could do all the behind-the-scenes stuff, which is one of the reasons why you haven't heard it being officially done just yet. But they apparently, from what I am told, have received the permission for that team to move their game to another site or another time or another date or whatever. But the point is making that stadium available for this fight. It's also the kind of situation where they're going to have a lot of government backing in terms of marketing, promotion, and the finances that flow into it. Those are things, you know, governments move like glaciers. It's not like, you know, somebody that can just make a unilateral decision and say, okay, we're done and we're good. These things go through layers of bureaucracy, and this is no different. So taking that into account, it's actually moving pretty quick when you take into account all the things that needed to be done. So I do think it's going to be a two-fight deal that they make between DiBella and Top Rank, Lomachenko. If George loses, he'll have a rematch clause. And keep in mind also that one of the things I think that was important to Kambosos is he doesn't want to lose the belts. He doesn't want to be stripped. And there was pressure behind the scenes from Top Rank to the WBO, I am told, to call the mandatory, which Lomachenko is the mandatory in the WBO. So that would satisfy that aspect also. But if you're going to have a mandatory challenger, you know, he's not one of these mandatory challengers that's kind of unknown and nobody knows about or cares about or doesn't really want to see. Vasily Lomachenko is, even without belts, arguably the number one lightweight in boxing in terms of his overall abilities, talents, who you would make the favorite in any of these matchups, even if George is the one that has the title. So I think that's the case. Ryan Garcia, without question, was number two in terms of the negotiations. I mean, it wasn't like they were doing it behind anybody's back. Everybody knew that they were fielding other offers and making other offers and discussing these types of fights. The one thing I think that was the difference was George didn't want to have a meaningless fight, you know, against just a tune-up regular guy, even if it was going to be a homecoming celebration. If he was going to go the Ryan Garcia route, it would have meant him fighting at home in Australia sometime in that June timeframe against some other opponent, because Ryan is coming back from the injury and having his interim, you know, his tune-up, shake off the rust, you know, get to know Joe Goosen fight in April. And so George would have to win. Ryan would have to win, and then they would have each other in the fall. And of course there'd be a rematch clause in that fight also. So that would really be more like a one-off and then a two-fight deal with Golden Boy and Garcia. I feel like they just didn't want to necessarily go there unless the money was so overwhelmingly more. They didn't really want to have the regular fight. They wanted a big fight in the next fight. And I applaud George Kambosos for that. How many times, Chris, have we seen guys, you know, reach the top, win a title, you know, beat a top guy and then rest on their laurels, take a soft touch. And I'm not even knocking that. I get it. It is a business and it is entertainment. You want to show the fans something, but George is built different than most guys. He wanted a real fight, whether it was going to be against Devin Haney, against Ryan Garcia, against Vasily Lomachenko. He wanted a real guy in front of him in the next fight. The Devin Haney situation, boy, have I seen a lot on Twitter about that. I'm sure you have also. Mm-hmm. Here's the reality. DAZN, which is going to help finance this fight in terms of the United States. A lot of people make the mistake that there's no other money except for DAZN. There's a huge amount of money in Australia for the pay-per-view, for the gate, from the government, from the sponsors, a tremendous amount of money. Of course, if you're going to do a DAZN fight in the United States, that's important. But they just didn't want that fight. they, again, I like Devin Haney personally. And for everybody that's been criticizing me, if you said I had the right to make the fight I wanted to see in the next fight, I'd wave my magic wand and say, George Kambosos, Devin Haney for the undisputed championship. End of story. But that's not how it works. The people at DAZN, and Eddie Hearn can say whatever he wants, whatever, they did not want this fight, period. They've spent massive amounts of money on Devin Haney. They've gotten very precious reward back for it. Ryan Garcia drives subscriptions. Devin Haney does not. He was never a true option unless he came for so cheap they couldn't turn it down. And that's not the case for Devin Haney. As far as the Lomachenko fight goes, that's an ESPN situation. Top Rank, of course, is looking to get their guy the biggest fight possible. And that certainly was the one. And therefore, the choice came down to we go and we make deals to do the U.S. with ESPN and Lomachenko, or DAZN and Ryan Garcia. And I don't believe that Devin Haney, other than maybe at the very beginning, was ever truly legit for this fight. Again, nothing against Devin Haney, tremendous young fighter. And I don't subscribe to the nonsense that he's not a true a guy with a true title, because he is. As I said many times on Twitter and in some of my columns and things, DAZN is the buyer. When you're the buyer, you have the right to choose what you're going to buy. If you walk into the, you know, to the grocery store, you get to decide, you know, do you want the corn chex, you want the Cheerios. I mean, that's the bottom line. You get to pick what you want. And they didn't want to buy Devin Haney. They wanted to buy Ryan Garcia.
Yeah. The phrase, like, does he want the fight, or the question, does he want the fight, gets asked a lot in boxing. When it comes to Lomachenko, he wanted the fight. Like, he made it abundantly clear that this was the fight he wanted, and come hell or high water, he wanted Top Rank to do everything they possibly could to make that fight happen, to the point where I was told recently that Lomachenko went to Top Rank and said, look, if there's a financial gap between me and Kambosos, take a little bit from my side to make sure this fight ultimately happens. So he wanted the fight. Haney, I get what you're saying about whether DAZN wanted it or not. I just think the Haney talks got off on the wrong foot right away. Like, they immediately, you know, kind of became adversarial because of what the Haney side was asking for and what the Kambosos side was willing to give. And, you know, look, one thing you said there is, like, would it, unless it became so cheap for DAZN that they could just sign off on or do it, shouldn't that have been the attitude from Devin Haney? He's made a boatload of money over the last couple of years. I mean, he has been, he's benefited greatly from this relationship with Eddie Hearn, specifically financially. Like, this to me, Dan, was the kind of fight that if you have to take a haircut to do it, you go and do it. You got to go out there and you got to collect those belts.
You take a buzz cut. You let him shave it all off.
I agree. I agree. I mean, hold on. You've got to do whatever it takes. I mean, you're not going to make nothing. Like, Lomachenko might be taking, like, less than he wants, but he's still making low seven figures. Like, he's still going to get rich. Like, I mean, and he's going to walk away.
Well, here, one thing about Lomachenko and Haney are just built differently in mentality. Lomachenko came into the boxing profession in terms of his, not his amateur career, but his pro career. His stipulation with Top Rank when he signed with them, he wasn't asking for any kind of, like, crazy bonus. A lot of guys that come in off two gold medals in the Olympics, and they're looking for gigantic bonuses and huge minimums and all that kind of stuff. Lomachenko sat with Bob Arum and his manager, Egas Klimas, and their main thing was, yeah, of course they got a bonus and they got generous minimums and all, but nothing that was outlandish. What Lomachenko's main stipulation was, can you get me a world championship fight in my pro debut? And Bob tried, came back to them. This is going back when he signed, and like, look, I can't get you the title fight in your debut. What I can do is we can fight a real guy in a regional title type fight, a 10 rounder in your debut. I can get you the title fight in your second pro fight. And that's what he did. How many fighters do you know of? I don't know if there's any that exist, frankly, that would be willing to fight Orlando Salido, who was still, you know, at his best in their second professional fight for the opportunity to fight Vertel. Now, granted, he lost that fight on a very close decision, but his mentality was never about the money. He has made huge money, but from day one, Lomachenko has always been about the challenge, you know, and he understands that if you are successful in boxing and you take those challenges and you are successful, more than not, that money is going to come anyway. So Lomachenko has made many, many millions of dollars. Has maybe over the years, he's left a few dollars on the table. Absolutely. But he's got the legacy and the resume, and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. And he understood that the opportunity to fight for a bunch of titles that he once had and lost to Teofimo Lopez, that those opportunities, especially to collect them all in one night, are few and far between. And he's going to do whatever it takes on the business end to make sure that George Gamboa is standing across the ring from him. If the fight doesn't happen, it sure as heck isn't because the team Lomachenko hasn't given its best effort to make the fight. And I think that's the match that's going to happen. I think that George Gamboa is not scared of anybody. You know, if you're coming off that kind of career defining win, to win those titles the way he did in that great fight he had last fall with Teofimo Lopez, and you select Vasily Lomachenko in your next fight, you're not wired like regular guys. Devin Haney is wired different. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. This is a kid that didn't grow up with much, you know, and he's made a lot of money. He's enjoyed that. Good for him. Doesn't make him a bad kid by any means whatsoever. But, you know, for him, the money was certainly important. I can understand why Devin has felt extremely disrespected because of the fact that so many people disregard the WBC title belt that he has, even though to me, it's just as legit as any other title out there. And so therefore the, like you said, the negotiations may have gotten off on a tough stance. I knew it was too good to be true. I saw them in your interview post-fight after Devin defeated Joseph Diaz, and the talk was great. They want to fight each other. He's willing to go to Australia, do all the things it takes to happen. But you and I have both been around long enough to know what gets said in a post-fight interview doesn't necessarily translate to the bargaining table after the fact. On top of this, by the way, it is by all sources I have talked to involved with this situation, Devin Haney and his father, Bill, are not vaccinated against COVID-19. And that's a problem. And you're not going to Australia if you're not vaxxed. Lomachenko, meanwhile, is saying, you need me to get a booster? I'll get a booster. We already know he's vaxxed because he fought in New York City against Richard Comey, where everybody that was there had to be vaccinated. So the vaccination status was also something that was holding things up.
That would be disappointing, the vaccine stuff, only because, I mean, I have the text message from Devin who told me he had the one shot already, and then I actually tweeted it out and he retweeted it. So, I mean, that would be a pretty bold lie if that was the case. But I do agree that Australia is not screwing around. You've got to get vaccinated in order to, you know, participate in sports in that country. Just ask Novak Djokovic, who is a bigger star than anybody that's out there currently.
By the way, in Australia's national tournament, as far as tennis goes, they're not making an exception for him, they're not making an exception for Devin Haney or any other athlete.
Yeah. So I think when it comes to Gamboa, I think we are kind of on that proverbial 1 yard line when it comes to a deal with Lomachenko. If I'm Devin Haney, though, I saw him on social media tweeting out that he will take the exact same deal that Lomachenko did. It's one thing to say that on Twitter, but if you're going to try to salvage this at the 11th hour, which I think is going to be extremely difficult, you need to, you know, push your promoter, push your manager, push anyone. Call Lou DiBella yourself if you have to.
Not happening, and Chris.
I know, happening. But like, you know, that's the only way to save this. You have got to agree to take less than Lomachenko, if that's even possible.
There's nothing there, as far as I understand. There's nothing to save.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's right. I don't think they're like. So as far as I know, as we record this on Thursday, nothing has yet been presented to Gamboa. So it's not like he's, you know, looking at paperwork right now on a Lomachenko fight. It's the deal is better from everything I've been able to gather, and I'm sure you have as well.
Absolutely, but, I agree with that.
But like, I think there's still I hate to use these football analogies, but a Hail Mary from Devin Haney to come in and say, I'll take X, just make the fight happen, two fights in Australia. That's the other thing too. Like, Lomachenko is basically going to become an Australian resident for like the next year. Like, he's going to move there basically to have training camp there and do everything that comes with fighting twice in Australia. So if you're Haney and you really want this fight, find out what Lomachenko's doing and one-up him. Do it one better. Otherwise, you are going to lose out on this. And Dan, I don't know where he goes from there. Presumably, he moves up to 140 pounds because there's nothing left for him at lightweight. Ryan Garcia is not going to fight him, at least not this year and under these circumstances. So you go north, and then what? Is it like Regis Progre? Like, I love the fight. I don't know if we'd see that right off the bat, but there's not a lot for him, you know, immediately at 140 pounds. The titles are all owned by Josh Taylor. It puts him in a tough spot if he doesn't get this Gamboa fight.
That's a good point. You know, he still is the WBC champion. He can still stay at lightweight. I don't think he's necessarily outgrown the weight yet, even though.
Well, he's come close. He's close. He's, like, close. He's talked a lot about that.
I was going to say, I remember when he signed with Eddie in the first place and they did a press conference I was at in Las Vegas. They already were talking about, you know, within a couple of fights moving up. But as long as the money is what it's been at lightweight and there's halfway decent opposition, you know, I think he can still probably do it for a couple of more fights. But yeah, he's a young fighter, but sort of at a crossroads, not because of his talent is compromised, but because the business part of it is compromised. It's not, like you said, there's not a realistic fight to be made in my mind. Like I don't think Garcia would fight him, but I don't see why he wouldn't if the deal was right. I don't think a Tank Davis fight happens for 1,000 reasons. Lomachenko was obviously going to be up at lightweight fighting Kambosos, you know, in a separate platform doing his own thing. You know, he's got some decisions to make, but he's made very good money. He has fought some solid opposition. You know, Jojo Diaz was a very good win for him. You know, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, right now, the lightweight world revolves around George Kambosos, even though there's maybe some bigger names out there, you know, whether it's Tank Davis or Ryan Garcia, you know, or Lomachenko, his opponent, whatever. The good thing is it's a very talent-rich division. My great hope is that with all these guys, I mean, that they all fight each other. Right now, Lomachenko is the one that's doing that. He fought Teofimo. He's now on the verge of getting the fight with Kambosos. Kambosos obviously had the mandatory against Teofimo, but the other guys have yet to fight the other best guys. Tank Davis, Ryan, and Devin have fought good opposition, but not the very best opposition.
Yeah, which is disappointing because, you know, it was a couple of years ago, we talked about the four princes or whatever we're going to call them in that division, and nobody is fighting each other. All right, let's move on and talk about what we saw this past weekend from Daniel Jacobs, the former middleweight champion, who lost a very close, little bit controversial decision to John Ryder over in the UK. I know Jacobs' management was out there screaming that this was a robbery. I had Jacobs winning, Dan, but I've seen worse robberies. Like
that was, you know, the worst.
Yes, that's not thousands, that does not fit the description of a robbery. And Jacobs, if you know, if you got to point a finger, you don't really point at the judges necessarily. You point it kind of at yourself, because he had some weird moments in the second half of that fight. I mean, he was cruising through the first six rounds. You get to the second half, and all of a sudden, he's like going southpaw for long stretches of this fight.
Never understood that.
Yeah, and he's letting Ryder, who's a smaller fighter, get on the inside, mix it up a little bit with him. He opened the door for John Ryder to make a comeback. And look, you can say, oh, one of the judges gave the 12th round to Ryder. He should have done that. All that can be true. But in my mind, when I look at, if I'm ranking the reasons Daniel Jacobs lost, Daniel Jacobs is number one for how he fought the second half of that fight.
I totally agree with you. I had the fight 7-5 in favor of Jacobs. And there sometimes are 7-5 fights where you could watch it 100 times and you're going to always be 7-5 and you just can't see it being the other way. Kind of like, you know, a 2-1 baseball game is a real close game, but it's still 2-1. You know, I've watched Marvin Hagler against Sugar Ray Leonard. Who knows how many times, every time I watch it, it's 7-5 Ray Leonard. I can't find 7 rounds to give to Marvin Hagler. End of story. In the fight between Jacobs and Ryder, obviously not the caliber fight of Leonard and Hagler, but in terms of the scoring, you know, there's a couple of close rounds there. You could have gone either way. I can't really argue with 7-5 one way or the other. I couldn't argue with 6-6. Personally, I did think it was 7-5. Yes, you can look at the judges' scorecards individually and see how did they score certain rounds and question that. But like you said, at the end of the day, when you're up basically 5-1, perhaps 6-0, it's inexcusable for you to not to win the fight. Danny Jacobs has been a hell of a fighter for a long time. He's a great guy. He's overcome cancer and done amazing things in boxing when people didn't think he was ever going to walk, perhaps live, much less become a championship level boxer again. He did all of that. But he's not getting any younger. He was coming off a long layoff. He looked terrible in the fight before this against Rosado. He was very fortunate to get away from that fight with a split decision victory. And that's going to catch up to you. And when you sign on the dotted line to go fight in your opponent's hometown, home country, what have you, I'm not saying the judges did anything untoward. They had a good judging panel on that fight. But the guys do sometimes get that benefit, not because there's corruption or anything like that, but they're human beings, the judges. They hear the crowd. You feel the energy. And John Ryder pressed the action big time in the second half of that fight. You know, it was one of those kind of fights where I really wish that our dear friend, the beloved Harold Letterman, was still around to give his view of what was going on late in that fight with the effective aggressiveness. I could hear Harold in my mind talking about that type of thing in that fight, because John Ryder did that in large stretches over that second half of the fight. That's where he won this bout, in the trenches late in that fight. And if Danny Jacobs can't go into London or anywhere and beat John Ryder, another good guy, but not in my mind on that level that Danny has once been on, you got to really question what you're doing with the rest of your career. You know, yeah, this is a loss and a terrible performance in the fight before that. I'm not sure where he's going at this point.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because, you know, Jacobs is going to continue fighting. His manager, Keith Conley, believes he should be get the opportunity to go right back into another big fight, should be treated as the winner of this fight, even though he didn't get the win. I'll say this. At 35 years old, his options are limited, but I don't think he should remain at 168 pounds. Like, we've now seen three fights of Jacobs above 160, and all three have been uninspiring. The Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight, I mean, it kind of gets lost in the absurdity of the ending of that fight, but I didn't think Jacobs was any great shakes in that one. The Rosado fight was like, I'm looking for like a knife to put through my eyeball as I try to remember that one. That was ugly. And then you have the Ryder fight where, look, he looked good boxing early on, and then didn't. Then like, he doesn't, at 168, Dan, he doesn't have like the speed or the size, and I don't want to say he's a powerful guy, but some of the power he had at 160 pounds. So if he's going to continue, I think he's got to go back down to 160 and try to get a big fight. I'm still very much interested in Jacobs, Jermall Charlo, if they're both still hanging around at 160. You want to do Jacobs, Jaime Munguia at 160 pounds. I'd probably sign up for that at that point. But Jacobs at 168, I have seen nothing to make me believe he can fight at the highest level. Even if you give him credit for winning that fight against Ryder, I don't mean to bash John Ryder, but it's John Ryder. He's a good fighter, but not a great one, and certainly not among the elite in the super middleweight division. I don't know what the point is if you can't win wide against John Ryder to continue chasing those other big names.
I literally couldn't have said it any better. I mean, we don't agree on everything, but you said every single thing that I possibly could have said about that situation. The one thing I would say, though, is that, like you said, Danny has not shown the punching power as a super middleweight. As a middleweight, he's a tremendous puncher. I mean, he has a huge knockout ratio as a middleweight, and he's fought some good guys at middleweight. Now, he didn't knock out, you know, some of the best guys he fought at middleweight. He didn't knock out Gennady Golovkin, for example. He didn't knock out Canelo or Devonchenko, but he's got a huge amount of knockouts. You know, I'm not sure if he has a desire or the ability to return to 160 pounds. But I do think that, you know, look, he's on a fight by fight basis now with Eddie Hearn. So promotionally, he can pretty much do what he wants to do. Even though he was once an Al Haymon fighter, they've always maintained a relationship. His manager, Keith Conley, still has a lot of business with Haymon. There's respect there. They can absolutely do business. I do think that if Charlo does not end up getting the fight with Canelo Alvarez, that has been one of the possibilities for Canelo in the spring, that would be a good alternative. And you know what, as a boxing fan, whether they did it at 168, whether they did it at 160 for Charlo's title, they did it at a catch weight in between. You know what? If I'm going to watch Danny Jacobs fight and I'm going to watch Charlo fight, and it's not going to be against, you know, one of the other champions or Canelo fight for that matter, you know, sign me up. I'm down for Charlo versus Jacobs. That's a good matchup. They'll talk it up. They have styles that probably would go well together in the ring. You know, I think that's an appealing fight. You know, it remains to be seen whether they can make that financially. Because
there it
is.
This is what I said to people in Jacobs' camp. I'm like, all right, you know, Charlo Jacobs, good, great fight. Who's paying for it? Like, where's the money come from? Because both those guys are going to want seven figures, low seven figures for that fight to happen.
They can get that money. It's just a matter of how many seven figures. Like, I could see that absolutely being a quality fight on Showtime.
They ain't paying for that. You know they're not paying for that. Like, that's too much.
Why?
Because I don't believe that deal gets done unless Charlo and Jacobs get a combined package in excess of $6 million. Like, I don't see how it happens. I don't. And then you're talking pay-per-view.
You have to at least do the you at least have to do the due diligence and find out what the asking prices are. Now, don't forget also, PBC has been doing with Fox pay-per-view fights. They put Keith Thurman versus Mario Barrios on pay-per-view. They put on the heavyweight lineup of fights on pay-per-view on New Year's Day. That was a lower price point, but nonetheless a pay-per-view.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, but Dan, like the combined pay-per-viewership was like, you know, the attendance at Mount Snow in Vermont. Like, I don't like this.
But at $6 million, let's say your number is accurate. And if they're in for $6 million, that's the kind of fight on pay-per-view that could actually not lose them money. In other words, the notion of pay-per-view, I think this is, it's not lost on you, but I do think it is lost on some people. It's not relevant what the number of buys are or how much the price is. The only thing that matters when you're doing a pay-per-view fight is, do you spend less on the event than you take in? And if they could do that fight, I could see that being a Fox pay-per-view that would actually not do huge pay-per-view numbers, but probably enough to support the event. And again, I don't discount Showtime's ability to perhaps finance that.
If it's a Showtime fight, that's great. Like, I'd watch that on Showtime. I just think, I mean, pay-per-view is just a tough sell, especially with Jacobs coming off.
I agree with that.
You know, Charlo being inactive, Jacobs coming off back-to-back lackluster performances. I'm just not sure who's buying that. I'd watch it, and of course I'd buy it, as you would, as someone that, you know, covers the sport. But like the casual fan, I don't know. I don't see it. I think that's a tough sell on pay-per-view. But we'll see. I hope Jacobs drops back down to 160. I can see him making a run in that weight division. But at 168, I think that it's over. All right. I want to move on to the aforementioned Jaime Munguia, who is going to be in his hometown of Tijuana, Mexico this weekend, taking on Demetrius Ballard, his first fight of 2022. His fifth fight now, Dan, at middleweight. I'm not, to say the least, I'm not overly impressed with the matchmaking here. Demetrius Ballard fought on the undercard of Jaime Munguia in his last fight.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddy, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip? But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Papi.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0. Winner, winner, chicken dinner, homie.
The Immaculate Reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He beat Paul Valenzuela by decision. That's kind of been the theme in a way for Jaime Munguia. Gabe Rosado fought in his undercard. He got a fight with Jaime Munguia. Demetrius Ballard fights in the undercard. He faces Jaime Munguia. But five fights in now, Dan, at 160 pounds. I was willing to give Munguia a couple of fights to get acclimated to a new weight class, but five, we are now in year three of Jaime Munguia as a middleweight, and his biggest win.
I don't know why you're pulling your hair out. It's very obvious. They just weren't interested in stepping up to fight the top guys. That's all. I mean, again, there's nothing wrong with that. That's their choice. When he got to 60, having given up the title from the WBO at 154 pounds, based on their rules, he could have immediately asked to become the mandatory, as many fighters have done in the past. Terrence Crawford did it. You know, Demetrius Andre did it. There's others who have done it. And Jaime could have done the same thing. They made the decision to get more acclimated, to take the time to work with Eric Morales when he switched trainers, et cetera. And, you know, they just weren't interested in doing that. I mean, it's very obvious. The matchmaking, you know, not the most impressive matchup I've ever seen. That said, as I wrote in my column today, I like watching Jaime Munguia. So, you know, I'm happy to watch him, but I'd like to see him tested against a top guy. He's a very aggressive fighter. He's got good punching power. I think he takes a good punch. He may not be super fast and super skilled, but what he's got in his heart and the mentality of go get you, that can deliver you to some big wins. And I'm not sure why they've been so reticent to do that. He's the kind of fighter that has the kind of style where if he takes a loss, who cares? Are you not going to watch Munguia because he's got an L against maybe a guy that might have outslicked him for seven rounds in a fight? I mean, so I don't get that. But you know, he hasn't fought at home in several years. This is a chance to go home, fight in a famous place in the venue that they're going to be in Tijuana. I mean, honestly, as much as I enjoy watching Jaime Munguia fight, I'm actually more interested in terms of the fight on the weekend to see the lightweight, undefeated knockout artist, William Zepeda, in his matchup. He's a very exciting fighter. One of the best on the coming guys. We talked a little bit about, you know, the depth of the lightweight division and the guys that are doing damage there. We talked about the big names. William Zepeda is going to become like the boogeyman there. Not a lot of guys are going to want to fight him in my mind. This is another chance to see this kid develop and see what he can do. He, you know, the Golden Boy has been bringing him along. You know, Eric Gomez had said to me, I was writing like a roundup of the prospects at the end of 2021. Zepeda was on that list. And, you know, he was telling me essentially, look, we're going to give him a couple more fights, but we're ready, you know, later in 2022 to turn him loose and, you know, field any offer against any top guy. They believe in him, and you know, we're going to get the chance to see him again on that undercard against not a well-known opponent, but you know, he's going to get a good exposure, and you know, we'll see if he looks good and can put his name into the mix in the lightweight division. And Munguia, you know, is going to, you know, I call it keep the chains moving. You know, we know what he wants to fight, like a Golovkin type fight, and get that payday and that sort of opportunity. That seems like it's a long way away. So Munguia's, I won't say he's spinning his wheels, but he's kind of spinning his wheels.
Yeah, well, on Zepeda.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddy as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip? But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going
to
pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe.
From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Papi.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love him too. Like, I first saw him fight really on that NBC Sports Network series when he won and looked great. Then he goes out and beats a good prospect, Hector Tanahara, and he becomes the prospect himself after that fight. I mean, he is.
Well, the Tanahara, that was the win that made him.
Yeah.
To the degenerates like us, sort of the eye opener, you know, because Tanahara had a lot of hype behind him and was a terrific amateur and, you know, had been looking pretty solid and good and been talked about for bigger fights as a pro. And to see Zepeda not just win, but like basically just grind him down and make the corner stop the fight, you're like, okay, I got to see more of this guy, Zepeda.
He's one of those guys, and it's not apples to apples, but he's like a Ruslan Provodnikov or an Artur Beterbiev, like where if you're going to beat him, you got to keep him off you for 12 rounds. And that's not easy because he just keeps coming and coming and coming and throwing punches. With Munguia, like the Android stuff drives me a little bit crazy because, I mean,
hold on. Something with Andre drives you crazy,
does,
Chris?
It does. But like, I
never believe that.
I said this to Eric Gomez, who's on the podcast back in December. And I'm like, why are you guys like fighting like eliminators? Like you have a world champion in Android being like, hello, I'm right here. You can fight me whenever you want.
They just the don't want that fight.
I know. But you know what? Like Gomez kind of opened the door to it back in December. I know they were chasing Gennady Golovkin, and this is a different conversation, but it sure sounds like Golovkin's going to be part of this next Canelo package with DAZN. So Golovkin's going to be tied up with Ryota Murata in the next couple of months, and then if all goes well, Canelo before the end of the year, which may be the last fight of his career.
If Canelo takes that deal, he's got the offer from PBC also.
Yeah, I get the sense. I get the sense he's going to take it, though.
But here's the reason why I'm not disagreeing with you, but the reason why it may change is because the original offer, as I have my understanding, was for the one fight with Charlo for the May fight. But there was the two fight package on the table from PBC, from Eddie and from DAZN to do go the other direction, culminating with the third fight against Golovkin. But the PBC people, my understanding is they added a second fight to that deal to do the September fight against David Benavides if he wins his May fight against David Lemieux. And both packages, were worth in the same ballpark. We're talking somewhere between $90 and $100 million, two fight offers. And the question is now from Canelo's people, do we go Charlo Benavides? Do we go Bivol Triple G? Now, as you, I think, have written, as I have written and said, I never understood why you'd have to bind yourself to one two-fight offer or the other two-fight offer. Canelo has such exorbitant leverage to do what he wants to do. He could pick and say what he wants. I want Charlo and do one fight that they offered and then go back to Eddie and DAZN and say, I don't need to fight Bivol. Let me go right to the Golovkin fight. That's the biggest money fight, obviously. So if you tell me that as a fan, would you rather see, these are the possibilities, Canelo versus Charlo, then Golovkin 3, Canelo versus Charlo Benavides, or Canelo versus Bivol Triple G 3. I, of those three possibilities, I'd much rather see Charlo Triple G 3. I love the Benavides fight also, but that's going to be there. And honestly, the Bivol fight does absolutely nothing for me. I just don't find it to be an attractive matchup. It's maybe a tough fight. I don't think it's exciting. Bivol, we talked about how indistinguished guys looked in recent fights like Danny Jacobs. Bivol might be the one guy that could challenge Danny Jacobs for looking not so great in his last two fights. So, Canelo and his people can sit down and figure out what they feel like is the best possible scenario and make their selection. But I don't think it's a guarantee, while it's certainly possible, that he's going to go that Bivol Triple G route.
Yeah, you're right. Anything can happen in the next couple of days. I don't want to go down the Canelo road just yet because I'll wait till he signs on and we can kind of dissect his decision.
We're kind of all over the place.
I'm just like, but I want to kind of zero in on Munguia though, because let's say, so he takes this fight and let's say Canelo does go the Triple G route. Like after this fight, what does he do? Like, do you keep fighting like the Carlos Adameses of the world? Like Andrade is moving up to 168. Jermall Charlo, presumably one way or the other, is going to go up to 168. Like, all of a sudden, Munguia's kind of looking around, and yeah, he can collect a title, but you're going to probably do it fighting, guys that nobody's really all interested in seeing you fight at this point. I feel like there was a window for him to, test his skills. Like, Andre would have been a great test of skills. Like, you kind of alluded to it. Like, what if he loses by being outboxed by a slick boxer? That's Demetrius Andrade, right? Like, he could lose that fight, but Andrade's not going to beat him up. And quite frankly, the idea that Andrade would dominate Jaime Munguia, anyone that says that has not watched enough of Jaime Munguia and Demetrius Andrade over the last couple of years. Munguia is better. Like, Eric Morales, even though he's completely ditched defense, he has made Munguia into an offensive machine. Like, he is a very, very, very good offensive fighter. Whereas Demetrius Andrade, as skilled as he is, he gets tagged with punches. He's not the most active puncher at times, whereas Munguia throws like 70 punches around. Like, he is an active guy in the middleweight division. So I feel like that might have been an opportunity that has now been missed with Andrade moving up.
Yeah, it probably has been, but I don't think there's been huge public demand to see Munguia versus Andrade, unfortunately. There hasn't been a lot of demand.
Yeah, just ask Demetrius Andrade.
Anybody. Yeah, against Andrade. So I understand. I'd be interested in that fight just because it does match two of the top guys, and whatever happens, happens. You mentioned Carlos Adames, maybe not the most well-known guy, but that would be a pretty good fight, actually. Adames is a very rugged fighter, comes forward also, has some skills. I think he takes a good shot. Power is pretty solid. That would probably be, I think, a kind of a fun trench fight. That would be something interesting, but it's not the most sexy because, the name recognition of Adames is just not there. But I'm not that worried about Jaime Munguia. He's not at a point where the money he's making is so overwhelming that there's not going to be somebody still willing to put him on as part of the programming package. So if Golden Boy and DAZN are doing fights regularly and you're in for a couple of Jaime Munguia fights a year, maybe three fights a year, I don't think that's a problem for anybody. You know, he has a popularity among the Mexican fans. If you like action fighters, people want to watch him. You know, he needs, though, I think, a bigger name opponent. And for whatever reason, and I don't think this is a Golden Boy issue. I think this is like a Team Munguia issue. They have not been vocal in any way, shape, or form about really stepping up and taking on an opponent that is more recognizable to the public or the press or whatever, and they're content to do what they're doing. And Ballard is another example of that fight.
I think Munguia would beat a lot of these guys. I think he's really good. He's got a good chin. He's got good power. Active, as I said. Like, he's a good fighter. I'd like to see him test himself at some point this year. All right, let's finish with the slobber knocker of a fight over in the UK, Dan. The washed Olympics between Amir Khan and Kell Brook. Amir Khan, a 2019 knockout victim of Terrence Crawford. Kell Brook, a 2020 knockout victim of Terrence Crawford. Still two wildly popular guys over in
Don't
the
forget,
UK.
One is a Canelo Alvarez knockout victim. Correct. One is a Triple G knockout victim.
Correct. So they've been knocked out by some of the best in boxing. This fight sold out reportedly in like less than an hour. So, you know, I mean, this is still a marketable fight over in the UK. I'll put it to you this way, Dan. Are you excited about Amir Khan versus Kell Brook?
I don't think excitement is the proper way to describe it. I'm going to watch it because I'm a degenerate and that's what I do. I understand that they're fighting each other, that in England, where they have been big names for a very long time, you know, it is still a popular and marketable fight. I felt like it would have been it's going to be a bonanza for them. Sky Box Office is going to be a pay-per-view over there. They're going to do good business. Obviously the arena sold out, like you said, in, you know, under an hour. I thought I had read like 20 minutes to sell the place. So, you know, it's going to do good business over there. It's, you know, obviously Top Rank put part of its ESPN Plus budget towards it. So they're giving it a real, it's not just a bout they're picking up for ESPN Plus. They're actually putting some resources and some production behind it. And they have some of their staff over there, which is going to stay through till next week because they have the Josh Taylor defense in the UK also. But so there's money being spent from the United States side of this thing. So they're treating it like a big fight, even if there's no titles. Hey, look, we all know this is the cash out fight. All their careers, Khan and Brook have been fighting. They fought lots of good opponents. They've been in some big fights, and it got to a point where there's nothing left for them to fight where they can make a real payday in a fight that is interesting to the public. And after many, many tries of trying to get this fight done with blame to be cast on both sides over the years, they finally have come together to make this fight. And, you know, it's like loser go home, maybe even winner go home.
I think it's both. So I think it's go home for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I get why the British public is into it. You know, I mean, I'm interested just from like the standpoint of like, I'm also interested, like if I see a car wreck on the side of the road, I look out my window and rubberneck a little bit. So from that standpoint, I am a little bit. But I will be thinking all through this fight, like, why didn't we see this 5 or 6 years ago when it would have literally been one of the best fights you can make in boxing? You know, you want to talk about a fight past its sell-by date. It is from the aesthetic point of view, but I guess from the public in the UK, it's not. And look, you know, you can't – they want to see the fight. They're getting the fight. I mean, again, it's later than it should have been. We're going to see it. Whatever happens, you know, if you listen to – I've been watching a lot of the UK reports about the fight. Some of the clips from Sky Sports, some of the YouTube channels that have been covering this fight, from, you know, that are UK based YouTube folks, they really think this means something. They really think. I was watching Adam Smith, my good pal, who, you know, is one of the executives who's been involved in running Sky Sports boxing business for a very long time. I've known Adam for probably 20 years. Like, he's talking about in the interview that of everything that these two guys have done in their careers, the titles that they have won and the big fights that they have had, this is the one they're going to be remembered for. And that kind of surprised me. I'm like, really? You mean Kell Brook's not going to be remembered for coming and fighting Sean Porter in Sean Porter's home country and straight up beating him for the welterweight title? And Amir Khan's not going to be remembered for, you know, everything from an Olympic silver medal all the way through, you know, coming to America and having, you know, a whole series of big fights and beating some good guys, you know, like just a tremendous amount of attention on some of those matches that at the end of his career, a Kell Brook fight, you know, like you said, the Wash Olympics, that's what he's going to be remembered for. I mean, we're Americans. Our perspective is different. Over there, it seems like that's what they're going to be remembered for. And they're both getting paid well for this fight, I guess. And, you know, good for them. So, you know, I'm not, it's kind of like if you had, you know, I'm not even sure. I have so many mixed emotions on this one. I'm not even sure how to explain it.
I think it was you, Dan, that tweeted out the magazine picture of, like, was it Kell Brook from 2005, like talking about Amir Khan or what are the other guys?
I retweeted that with a comment. It was, the original tweet was from my pal Matt Christie, was the editor in chief of Boxing News, the outstanding weekly magazine that comes out in the UK that's been around for like 100 years. And I guess that was when the genesis of the possibility.
Yeah, they love me over there at Boxing News. They love me.
No, they love you. They love you. They rip you every week. No, but that was not a, like, that was like a mention of it. It didn't really become something that could conceivably be made because they were separated by a lot of weight, a lot of experience, a lot of years, et cetera, at that point in terms of their pro careers. But the point was, it was first mentioned as even something that to germinate, to think about for the future 17 years ago. But again, it didn't really become something that people wanted to see until it was like legit, but it's still probably been like 7 or 8 years or 9 years. And they went through their primes and had other fights. They are the same age chronologically. They're both 35, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But this is the end of their careers. Generally, you know, they may still go on and have other bouts, but I don't know if they're going to ever get involved in a fight of this caliber for the rest of their careers. And, you know,
I also don't know. I don't know who wins. I mean, both these guys have been chinny over their careers. Kell Brook's going to have to come back down to 149, which, you know, he's not comfortable doing. Khan stipulated that. So that might make him a little bit more chinny, being, you know, weight drained going into this fight. Khan, I saw a quote from Khan doing prep for this podcast where he's like, "I was fat. Kell Brook is the only one that got me back in the gym." Like, what are we doing here right now? But it could be fun.
I wouldn't call Kell Brook chinny, because to me that's a guy who's, you know, knocked down all the time, or, you know, gets knocked out regularly. You know, Khan is the chinny one.
Yeah.
Because he has been laid cold on multiple occasions. The occasions where Kell Brook has been defeated have been on his feet. Or injuries, you know, when he lost to Errol Spence, for example, when he lost his world title, he was not knocked out. He was injured. He had a broken orbit bone. When he got stopped by Golovkin, it was another orbit bone on the other side of his face. Again, he gave Triple G a pretty good fight for a couple of rounds. And in the case of the Terrence Crawford fight, again, wasn't laid out cold, just, you know, got beat up and they stopped the fight. Kell, I think, has got a much better chin than Amir Khan. I think Khan's probably got better one-punch power than Kell Brook does. I think Khan is probably the more technically skilled in speed. Absolutely. I think that Brooks got a bigger heart than Khan. You know, we're going to find out. I mean, as we're talking about it, like, I guess I'm getting a little more excited about it. You know, what can I say?
You know, last thing on Khan, like, his career to me will always be a little bit disappointing. This is only going to be, I think, his seventh fight since 2015. Like, there was a time, Dan, and you were covering it, like, when Amir Khan looked like the next big thing. And then came those back-to-back losses to Lamont Peterson, to Danny Garcia. And
I hope he got robbed against Peterson.
He did. Garcia beat him fair and square, though. Knocked him out. Like, that was a legitimate one. And then, like, his inactivity, he became one of those guys that was like a caught up chasing fights. Like, how many times do we have to write about Khan chasing Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao? And that kind of derailed him and prevented him from being as active as he needed to be. He went good, all credit for going up in weight for the money grab that was Canelo Alvarez. He got stomped out in that fight, even though he was fighting pretty well until he got knocked out. But I'll always wonder what if with Amir Khan, because there was a 3-year window when it's like, is this the heir apparent to the other, to the aging generation? Would this be that next big star? And it never quite played out that way.
That's a fair point. But, you know, look, he did go up and take the challenge against Canelo, whether you call it a money grab or not, the same way that Kell Brook did against Golovkin, when nobody would fight Kell Brook at welterweight and nobody would fight Triple G at middleweight. And they made that deal. Remember, that was a deal that was supposed to be Gennady Golovkin against Chris Eubank Jr. And when Eubank Jr. Said no, Eddie Hearn presented Kell Brook with the same offer and Kell Brook jumped at it. So I give both of those guys credit. I mean, we can mock the age and how spoiled this fight is, and and all that. But I have to say, in all seriousness, I have ample respect for both fighters. They have been willing to fight the top guys and move up in weight. And Khan had that stretch, like you mentioned, where he fought some good guys. You know, even when he got knocked out by Danny Garcia, he pretty much dominated the fight till he got clipped, which is sort of the what has happened in some of his losses, where he does very well and then, you know, the lights get turned out. But he had some very good wins. You know, he unified titles against Zab Judah. He beat up on Paulie Malignaggi, came to Paulie's hometown and did it. You know, he has other significant victories and fought other top guys. I mean, Amir Khan is no joke. And I mean, I know that people can look at the memes of him getting knocked out and all that, but you know, it takes courage to do what he's done, knowing that you don't have the greatest chin and still going in there and fighting the best guys. And with Kell Brook dealing with those types of injuries, you know, he was the mandatory, Errol Spence was his mandatory, but he didn't duck or dodge it. He fought Errol Spence when no one else wanted to fight Errol Spence. So you have to give respect to both of these guys for the types of opponents they have fought. You know, the resume is the resume. And when you go and you look down, when these guys are long retired, you know, you may not necessarily remember every single fight, but if you look and say, oh, those are a lot of good names that show up on their ledger. And oh, by the way, they fought each other. Yes, it was at the end of their career. Yes, we can kind of make jokes around about, you know, the how it hasn't necessarily aged as well as it may have. But, you know, I still give these guys respect. They've been, you know, top class fighters for a long time. And, you know, I'm not going to discount their desire to win this fight, because, again, I don't necessarily see it where some of the Brits see this as like the fight that they're going to be remembered by. But if they think that's the way that they're going to be remembered by, you know that come Saturday, they're going to walk in that ring, give everything they've got. You can say whatever you want, but, you know, they, I think in their heart, they don't like each other, number one, and they want to win. It's, you know, the fight for Britain, I guess. I mean, it's kind of like, but not the same thing. I think you were there. Remember when Malignaggi fought Zab Judah? The fight for New York, the bragging rights? There was no titles at stake. There was no big, pound for pound conversation or anything. But it was like, I'm fighting my homie in our hometown, and you know, who's going to be able to say I'm the king of Brooklyn? Or it was similar. I mean, there was a title at stake, but kind of like finally when Abner Morris fought Leo Santa Cruz in Los Angeles, the battle for Los Angeles. Yes, there was a featherweight belt at stake, but more so than that, they wanted to be known as I'm the baddest guy in my neighborhood. And they fought each other twice. They were both excellent fights. Santa Cruz obviously got the better of it. And, you know, he's the king of LA in that weight division at that point. And this is kind of the same thing. And those are those rivalry, those backyard brawls. They happen all throughout boxing. I think about like Oscar De La Hoya when he was coming up, when they put him in a unification with Ruelas, it was a similar thing, or with Gennaro Hernandez, you know, the battles for East LA. You know, so this is like that battle for Britain. Between two top guys for a long time in the same weight class.
I think we just talked ourselves into being interested in this fight. I think that's what just happened over the last 5 minutes. Dan Rayfield writes a terrific newsletter over at Substack. Subscribe on his Twitter account. Fight Freaks Unite is the name of the newsletter. At Dan Rayfield 1 is where you can track him down there. Dan, always great to catch up, man. Thanks for joining me.
You bet, Chris. I appreciate it. Have yourself a good weekend.
When we come back, my conversation with Amir Khan. Fight fans, throw your best haymaker with a risk-free first bet from FanDuel Sportsbook. Even if your fighter gets knocked out or tapped out, new customers get up to $1,000 back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING and you'll be able to bet on all the biggest boxing matches and UFC fights. FanDuel offers all your favorite bets. Choose from the money line, to the method of victory, to which round the fight will end, and so much more. You can even parlay different fight bets together. The bigger your parlay, the bigger your potential payout becomes. FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook and is now live in New York. I am a part-time New Yorker, as many of you know. That's good for me. I can make my bets in New York without, you know, driving over the bridge to make those bets in New Jersey. The app is so easy to use, and when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 2 hours. To place your first bet risk-free, just sign up with the promo code BOXING and make every fight night mean more with the FanDuel Sportsbook app. All right, Amir Khan is here, the former two-division world champion. He is coming to us from the UK, where his final press conference against Kell Brook has taken place. Khan against Brook is a fight you can see Saturday here in the U.S. on ESPN+. So, Amir, we are talking to you right after what was a pretty testy press conference between you and Kell Brook. What did you take away from that?
Yeah, I mean, the press conference with Kell Brook, obviously, it's this fight's a little bit more personal than a normal fight. Obviously, Kell and myself, we've not been friends. We've never liked each other, and he's always envied my career, always wanted to be in my place. But obviously, what got me to my place and what got me to this is winning fights and going to America, fighting, being the big names, and you know, and having the tough fights and the hard fights. With Kell, didn't want to take them chances, obviously. But now the fights happen. I think you know, it's the time for me now to show and shut Kell Brook up.
You've looked a lot of top opponents in the eye going into fights. When you look at Kell Brook, what do you see?
First of all, I can see how hard it's taking him to make the weight, how hard it is. And also, I can see that, look, he's not fighting anyone like me with the speed, with the movement. And also, I know he keeps saying, I've got timing, I've got this, I've got that. But look, he can say what he wants because he's saying the right things to promote the fight, to make him look like he's going to win the fight. But like I said, he's not got a chance because I've got everything on my side, and I've done everything on my side to go into this fight and win this fight. Now having the new team in Bomac and Crawford and everyone in my stable, that's only made this fight for me, giving me a lot more confidence because I know that they were the last guys to beat him. And
Yeah, I mean, talk to me about that. The decision to train with Brian McIntyre back in the U.S. with the trainer of a man who beat you just a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So basically, the reason I wanted to do that is because I wanted to change my own style a little bit because I know I was making a lot of mistakes and I want them to change me. What did they see in me that the reason why Crawford beat me? What did they see in me for that? And also then, the last fight they had was against Kell Brook, and what made them break Kell Brook down? What was the tactics in that fight, and how did they beat him? So I thought, you know what, it makes some sense for me to get with someone like that who know Kell Brook inside out and know me inside out as well. They know how to improve me, but they know how to make me beat Kell Brook. So it was a perfect match.
Boxing in the UK is a big deal. You and Kell Brook have been two of the bigger names in the UK for a long time. In your opinion, why has it taken this long for this fight to happen?
I mean, the reason it took so long is because we both missed each other. Obviously, first of all, it was because of the weights. I was he was always one weight above me. Secondly, was because obviously I was campaigning in America, training over there and fighting a lot in America with American promoters. At that time, I was with Golden Boy, then I went with Al Haymon, then I did some shows with Top Rank. So I was always with them. But now I'm back in the UK, I'm at my own promotion. I decided to make this fight myself. And that's the reason the fight's happened now. Even though it's taken long, but it's been brilliant.
Is this the last fight of your career?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I feel... Let's see what comes Saturday night, because the way I feel and the way I'm training is the best I've ever felt for a very, very long time, especially this so close to the weight. Like, I woke up this morning 2 pounds off the weight, which is, like, unheard of. You know, normally I'm, like, 6-7 pounds off weight, but it's so easy to make weight. I've trained so hard. My body's in totally different. I've never been in this shape before in my life. I feel stronger. I feel sharper. And I just can't wait to put it to work and see how I feel after that. And after it's the best time for me to tell you after the fight, see how I feel and if I want to continue or not.
Sorry, Chris. Before
the Kell Brook opportunity came about, you know, you had not fought since you beat Billy Dibb a couple of years ago. Were you looking for other fights? Or did this Kell Brook opportunity sort of ignite something in you?
I was going with the flow. I was going with the flow, and I wanted a big fight. I was going with the flow. And obviously, the Kell Brook fight came on, and I thought, you know what? It was a godsend. The way things played out, the way things have happened, God was watching over me, and everything's happened for a reason.
And just the last question for you, Amir. Like, a lot of people in the U.S. know you well. You had some great fights here in America. You've been largely inactive, only, I think, 7 fights since 2015. If you could do anything differently with your career, would you do anything differently?
No, I mean, the way my career has gone, I think having that inactivity kind of give me a bit of a break because my body needed. And I think by having that break, that love came back into boxing. And it wasn't such a long break. I was still in the gym training. I was sparring hard as well. So really, the inactivity wasn't that much, but I still needed that just to give my body a break as well, because you can imagine the many years I've been training for. Well,
Amir, good luck on Saturday, man. We'll be looking forward to it. All right, time now for this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. Not a great week for me last week. I had Daniel Jacobs winning by decision. He lost by decision. In fairness, that was not a good decision. In the future, I need to start really taking into account the likelihood that a judge or judges is going to submit a terrible scorecard, which is what we saw in the Daniel Jacobs fight. But I have a much better bet this weekend. Amir Khan against Kell Brook, two aging warriors, two highly popular UK fighters going at it over in Great Britain. This could be a very fun fight. Both these guys are 35 years old. Both these guys have something of a history of getting knocked out. I am going with Amir Khan to win. He is the slightest of favorites, but I think he is both the fresher fighter, and I think because this fight is going to be contested at 149 pounds, he is going to be the sharper fighter. Kell Brook, at this point, he is 154-pounder, maybe even 160-pounder. He's just not that comfortable at 150 and below. So I think Kell's going to be weight-trained going into this fight. I think that's going to make him more susceptible to tiring. Now, how does this fight head? Khan's around plus 380 to win by decision, and that's the bet that I like the most. I think this fight could be a slobber knocker, but I'm not sure either guy has the power to stop the other. Sure, anything can happen when you've got two guys at this stage of his career, but I think Khan, his speed is going to be his biggest advantage, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of power behind those shots. He's not the most powerful guy at welterweight and above. So I think Khan winds up winning not a wide decision, but kind of an 8-4 type of decision over his longtime rival. So Amir Khan by decision. Those are my picks this week, brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Dan Rafael and Amir Khan for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And we will see you next week, maybe with Sergio Mora. Do you like sports, pop culture, and everything in between? Then tune into The Sessions with Renee Paquette every Tuesday and Thursday on the Volume Podcast Network. Renee peeks behind the curtains with your favorite athletes, actors, musicians, and more to unveil the stories that really matter. Download The Sessions with Renee Paquette wherever you listen to podcasts, every Tuesday and Thursday, only on the Volume Podcast Network.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really?
Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit NHTSA.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Last season, on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Cameron-Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian, from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.